Hello and welcome back to another episode of the HRER podcast, where we delve into the world of HR emergencies and scandals. Don't forget to follow and subscribe to HRER on your favourite podcast platform.
Get ready for scandalous stories, lessons learned, and a generous dose of advice for HR professionals for navigating the HR landscape.
Our goal here is not just to entertain, but also to help you learn from the topics we touch on in order to save your business from its own emergency. We have had to procure three specialist chairs for Callum over the last 4 years. The chairs are not cheap, and the last one was custom made and was thousands of pounds. He's gained weight this year and is now morbidly obese. We've considered options such as working from home so he would get more comfortable, but he wants to be in the office as he says it is the only time he gets out.
Currently, obesity is not a protected characteristic. But if somebody has got serious medical issues because they're obese, they could well be protected as a disabled person because of those conditions. Reasonable adjustments only have to be reasonable. So if it represents a significant financial burden for the business, they could argue that actually this isn't something that they are able to provide. Now, the complexity here is that it could potentially mean that this person can't do their job. Just before we start, protect your business from the risk of tribunal, reduce legal costs, and save yourself from HR headaches with our Heroes software and employment law consultancy services.
Welcome back to episode 16 of the HRER podcast. We're top 20 UK podcast now, aren't we?
18 as of this week.
18. We're trying to improve that as well, aren't we, obviously? We want to get better, so keep downloading, keep subscribing, all that good stuff.
And we're back in Leeds.
Happy to be here.
So after the guest series, which we filmed in London, which is very exciting.
Home surroundings.
It's back to the dream team.
Just you and me.
You and me. So
against the world.
Alyssa, Ollie, and our producer Dawn,
who
sits behind the scenes.
She knows she's here. Episode 16. We've got some. It's an interesting topic today.
Meaty topic.
Meaty. That's a pun, isn't it? I'm going to read out the title because we don't normally do that. I think that'd be good, eh? Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go.
Episode 16. When are you too fat to work? So I'll start by reading off the... This feels weird because I haven't done this in a while.
Well, we like to get into the difficult topics as well, don't we?
So we do, yeah.
This is a good one.
Sensitive one. And, I'll rattle off the email. So, bit of a sensitive topic. We have had to procure three specialist chairs for Callum over the last 4 years. The chairs are not cheap, and the last one was custom made and was thousands of pounds. He's recently submitted a request for another one. The reason being that he has outgrown the chair. This has been the case with the two previous ones. He's gained weight this year and is now morbidly obese. We've considered options such as working from home so he would get more comfortable, but he wants to be in the office as he says it is the only time he gets out. He has confirmed there are no underlying health conditions as the cause of his obesity other than an addiction to food and sugar generally, don't we all? Mm-hmm. In a day, he will typically have several takeaways delivered to the office, which he will eat at his desk. What do we do? We are generally concerned about his health. We are not a large company, and this does represent a significant expense for us.
So difficult and a sensitive topic. You know, it's we're talking about someone's personal appearance. I can't imagine it was an easy request for Callum to make to ask for another chair.
Awkward.
This was number three, number four? Three four. Specialist chairs. This is the fourth.
This is fourth, yeah.
So this has been an issue that was ongoing for a long time. And like I say, you know, a difficult one to discuss, particularly for HR. You know, they've reached out to come for help on this one because they're wondering, can they say no to this at this point? Mm. And at what point is it the employee's problem rather than the employer's problem?
Ooh. Well, you're here to answer all them questions, aren't you? I've got much expertise.
Let's
on
make
the
you
map.
Feel distinctly uncomfortable right at the start.
I don't know the answer.
The shoe
to that.
On the other foot.
Please don't put me in the corner.
Yeah, in this situation, we've got Callum who he's confirmed there's no underlying issues other than addiction. He's too big for his chair. And in this situation, he was an extraordinarily large individual. So we're
Could
not
put
talking
a
about
on that.
A number? I mean, I'm not very good at this sort of thing in terms of guesstimates on, you know, when you go to like a fair and it's like, guess how many sweets are in a jar against the weight of the pig. Yeah, I'm always way off. Yeah. He a very, very large person to the extent where he struggled with his mobility. He walked using physical aids and he was actively seeking medical support for things like sores.
So
we are talking about someone who is very, very large.
When skin overlaps, doesn't it?
Yeah, this isn't like a, you know, Weight Watchers Slimming World for 6 months and we're all, you know, back to normal. This is someone who had a really, really serious problem.
It's an addiction, eh?
It is, yeah, addiction. So what this sort of topic raises is the debate about whether somebody like this would be protected from discrimination.
Okay.
And that is what the client was getting at here when they were asking this question is, basically, do we have to provide a reasonable adjustment? So we've talked about disability discrimination in the past, how when you've got someone who is suffering with a disability, an employer has got an obligation to make reasonable adjustments. So we're leveling the playing field for somebody at work. So if someone has a disadvantage because they've got a disability, we level up. We want to make things a little bit easier for them so that everybody can compete at the same level. Mm-hmm. The debate has raged for years about obesity and whether that is a disability in itself.
So at what point is it self-inflicted? You know what I mean? It's blurred line, isn't it?
That's a separate question as well, is if something's self-inflicted and it becomes a medical problem, is it still a disability? Which it would be.
Or is it self-harm? Strange way of putting it, isn't it?
Well, I mean, that again, we're getting down a rabbit hole with that one.
Yeah.
But we have got this campaigners here. I'm just going to sidestep that one. let's not get the house burnt down over that question. You've got campaigners who are arguing that obesity in itself should be a protected characteristic. So what I mean by protected characteristic is the categories of things that will give people protection at work. So we can't treat someone differently because they're a woman. So sex discrimination, we can't do that. We can't treat someone badly because they're pregnant. Pregnancy discrimination. We can't treat someone badly because of their race or their beliefs. We also can't treat somebody badly because of disability. So it's whether obesity gets added to that list or not.
Right.
Currently, obesity is not a protected characteristic. But if somebody has got serious medical issues because they're obese, they could well be protected as a disabled person because of those conditions. So say, for example, we take Callum. He had significant issues with his joints. So I believe he had arthritis and it caused mobility issues because of, I think, the sheer weight issues through his joints.
Yeah.
Because of that as an issue, he would be protected as a disabled person. So it's not the obesity that would give him the protection under discrimination legislation. It's the medical issues that have come out of the fact that he's so overweight, whether it's self-inflicted or not.
Okay.
So that's the status in terms of the law. So because of his sort of surrounding health conditions that have arisen because of his weight, he is going to be protected under discrimination legislation.
Okay.
You don't know where to go with that now, do you?
I don't know how I sit on that, to be honest, because it's... I don't experience obesity, obviously. Yeah. I don't experience food addiction or anything like that. I get addictions, but at what point does the employee have to be seen as trying to help themselves? And do you know what I mean? Before
it's the self-inflicted argument that I think gets people so wound up about this. So there's obviously people who have got medical conditions that cause them to gain weight.
Yeah,
there are. You know, that's undisputable. There are things out there that will cause people to gain weight. There's also people who have got issues with self-control and addiction, which also cause them to gain weight. Mm-hmm. And it was actually this issue that meant that I got my BBC contributor slot on the radio. So I wrote a blog years ago when I was a baby lawyer, and Katie Hopkins shared it on Twitter. And with the aggressive feelings that often follow some of her postings that then sort of litter the internet.
Does she agree with you?
She did on
what you said.
She did, which I don't know if that's a good thing. I'll have to dig the article out and see if we can reshare it. I thought I was very measured, but clearly if Kate Hopkins
agreed, she grabbed it and went.
But it was so divisive and the topic's seen as something that sparked so much debate that actually led to my BBC Radio contributor slot. So it's something that has raged for years. And I think that was 12, 13, 14 years ago. You know, so this is not a new topic in that respect. So what we need to think about now with this one is, well, what does the employer do?
Mm-hmm.
So as you've pointed out, you know, where do we talk about self-help and someone kind of trying to improve their own lot versus making this the responsibility of the employer?
I imagined it would be sort of a cohesive thing, but we'll start with employer questions. So first one, the cost of the chairs, how significant is the financial impact on a small business?
So this chair was thousands, the one that he needed. So it needed to be reinforced. It had to be extra wide, extra tall, to be able to support.
Was it a custom job?
A custom job, because of his size. And there's not many businesses, I think, even around the world. Well, actually, no, in the UK, maybe not. In the States, I think there's more that, that accommodate for this. They call them bariatric equipment. So hospitals have to order in specialist bariatric beds for when you've got people who are morbidly obese. I believe in America, the emergency services have specialist bariatric, I don't know if they're rescue teams, but where you've got someone who falls ill in their house and they can't fit them out through the doors, that will cut windows and take walls and doors out and use crane type equipment to take people to hospital.
Extract them from the house.
So, but in the UK, not quite as common, I would say. So this, which then inherently means that the price gets driven up on these sorts of things. So this was a significant cost for this employer. And we're then into the realms of, well, actually, what is reasonable for them to do? So if we're saying that this chap is protected by disability discrimination legislation, is it a reasonable adjustment for the company to pay for a chair of this sort of expense? They were saying fundamentally they couldn't afford it. They ran on a very, very tight financial ship. You know, they weren't kind of operating with a big budget and lots of profits. And they were saying, well, having provided him with 2, 3, now 4 chairs.
Was this in the space of like a year or so?
It was over the space of a couple of years. Okay. So it's been gradual, but it's not really the kind of thing that equally that you can just sort of sell on. That they were pushing back and saying, look, we genuinely, whilst we're concerned about him, this isn't something that the business can afford. And provided that, you know, they're not making it up, reasonable adjustments only have to be reasonable. So if it represents a significant financial burden for the business, they could argue that actually this isn't something that they are able to provide. Now, the complexity here is that it could potentially mean that this person can't do their job, because if they haven't got the ability to sit down at work, he's not someone who could have stood all day, then you're sending this person home to work in isolation where he's already said this is the only time that he gets out and has social contact. This is his only kind of exposure to the outside world. Yeah. And this is, it was a really sad case because the way he was kind of verbalizing this is, you know, without work, I'm living in a prison.
Oh, not good for your mental, is it?
It's not. So then, you know, we do have that duty of care as an employer to look after our employees in terms of their work environment and make sure that their work environment isn't having a negative impact on their mental health. So they really, really, really were between a rock and a hard place with this one. One, fundamentally couldn't afford the equipment that he needed. But two, if they then send him home to work, that they were worried that his mental and medical state would deteriorate to such an extent that they would feel responsible for what happened to him.
So like work was the only thing like keeping him occupied. That was his sort of outlet and for the stress he was experiencing, bless him. Well, it's not all straightforward, is it?
No, this was a really, really tough one. And it actually had quite a sad ending. This one, he was ultimately... I believe it was maybe 18 months after this issue, he succumbed to his medical issues and he actually passed away. So it was a really, really difficult one for the employer at the time. He was a well-liked individual, you know, by all accounts, wonderful man, but with some significant demons.
It's tough.
So it was a difficult one for the employer emotionally as well and for his colleagues.
Oh, that's a shame, isn't it? Jesus Christ.
And I think it's a reminder, you know, we deal with real people.
Yeah.
You know, we do take on the difficult topics on this podcast and, you know, we talk through the things that sometimes have no answer, but not everything has a happy ending. And that's part of the job of HR. You know, it's a real difficult one. And I think it's something that, you know, from when we had the guest, so we had Paul McGregor from Everymind, is remembering the impact that some of the work can have on people, like, you know, our mental health first aiders and HR, making sure that they're looked after.
I don't even think like that's relevant. I think like the fact that this chap went to work as like an escape speaks volumes as well.
Yeah.
Like we spend a lot of time at work, don't we? It's important to not have a good time, but somewhat enjoy ourselves.
Yeah. And it's something I like about our office. You know, for me, it's one of the highlights of my week is, I was going to say the highlight. One of the highlights of my week is coming into the office, and it's that social interaction. And I was someone who during COVID, you know, working from home was an opportunity, certainly for me, because I used to have a very long and sort of draining commutes. But then it does become quite isolating at home. It's nice to get in the office and kind of, you know, build those social interactions and relationships. And I think that's something that you have to bear in mind with something like this, particularly where more often than not, the argument that we're hearing from people is that they're desperate to work from home. But where you've got someone like this who is desperate to work in the office,
It works both ways.
Yeah.
Some people like being on their own, like being left to do it, like your standard, like default sort of software developers do.
Yeah.
But when you do what we do, if you're in like marketing or customer service or even sales, like you need to, you get things done quicker as well, as well as it being a nice environment.
Yeah.
I digress. Second sort of employer question. Someone who is extremely obese is 147% more likely to be off sick. Considering that there are no underlying health conditions to the employee's obesity, what level of support is the company obligated to provide? You said reasonable support, did you not?
So when we're looking at adjustments to the workplace, they only have to be reasonable. Mm-hmm. What I think this question is, so when we're talking about being off sick, is if someone is signed unfit to work, whether it's self-inflicted or not, they are entitled to be off sick.
Okay.
So say, for example, and this is a really extreme example, if you had a drug addict who had a very bad reaction to something he took at the weekend and wasn't fit to work on the Monday, well, he's still off sick. You know, if he goes to his GP and gets signed off as unfit to work because of some reaction, then, you know, he's not fit. Arguably, that's SSP. There isn't really a debate about it. Some sickness policies, particularly where it's company sick pay, so we're topping up what the state mandates that we pay to people who are off sick. Sometimes you will find a clause in those policies to say that if you have done something that's self-inflicted, that you're not entitled to company sick pay.
So statutory.
You can still get statutory, but you can't get some company sick pay. So an example what I dealt with a client recently was someone who went to Turkey for a Brazilian bum lift. Is that what they're called? BBL? Yeah.
BBL, yeah.
Yeah, Brazilian butt lift.
Yeah.
Came home, wasn't well enough to work. She just had surgery.
Mm-hmm.
They had a very generous company sick pay policy that would pay full pay for 3 to 6 months if somebody was off. And they said, no, we're not paying it. That was elective surgery that you've gone to Turkey for. Back onto SSP you go.
Yeah, rightfully so, in my
opinion. Discretion with company sick pay, but ultimately if someone is signed off by their GP as unfit to work, then they're going to be entitled to that sick leave.
If you're dishing out company sick pay for like plastic surgical procedures, people are going to start taking a mick in there.
That's why that discretionary clause needs to be in there. So there's a lesson for employers. If you are going to have company sick pay where you are being generous, just make sure that you have got your little carve out, because Brazilian bum lifts are super popular at the moment.
That's turkey teeth, turkey hair.
Yeah.
It's all in the range, isn't it?
Yeah. I can't remember what the interview was that I was watching. I'm going to say it was an interview. I don't think it was anyone I was talking to at work, where they were talking about what their sort of ideal partner would be. And they actually referenced turkey teeth. Said, yeah, that's what they're looking for, turkey teeth. And I was like, is that a thing? And this was new to me. I was like, what's turkey teeth? They said, oh, it's where you go to, go to a foreign, it doesn't have to be Turkey, obviously, you go to a foreign country and get your veneers done. But that was to put on your dating profile, looking for, you know, good job, own house, car, turkey teeth.
It's so common, isn't it, nowadays? Yeah. It really is.
I'm looking at Dawn now. It wasn't you, was it, Dawn?
I don't think it sounds like you, to be fair. Third question. How should HR approach the delicate conversation regarding how an employee's weight is impacting their work? Can they address concerns as a duty of care? How open would you be about this discussion?
So in this situation, the employer was very open about it because this had been a long-standing issue. This was chair number 4. You know, they'd been here 3 times before. And whilst it wouldn't necessarily center on size, there were significant discussions around mobility. So he struggled with the stairs. He would struggle with maneuvering through some of the doorways in the building. So getting into the gents, where the cubicles were quite
like
tight. That was an issue. So there were discussions about, you know, what they could do to try and make the workplace a little bit more comfortable for him. So it wasn't necessarily about reasonable adjustments when it came to his sheer size, but more, what can we do to kind of make things a bit more comfortable for you? Which, you know, that it's a good, positive, proactive approach to it. They also had some discussions about, well, look, what can we do to help support you in terms of losing some weight.
Long term.
Yeah.
Like a long term resolution. Because that's all like just kind of fitting around the problem in it.
And it's a very, very sensitive topic, you know, for an employer to say to an employee, how can we support you with losing weight? With this situation, because it was so extreme, and it's causing medical problems. It was taken very, very well by the employers. You know, this is proactive support, and he was very grateful for that. Where I would say it goes down less well is where you've got someone who's probably within normal high street sizing and the employer offers them, you know, a Slimming World membership. You know, we're generally about inclusivity, body positivity, allowing people to be themselves, which in this day and age they should be. But where you've got someone like this where it is so extreme that it's causing medical issues.
It's life and death, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a legitimate conversation that you can have with this individual. There's another company that I'm working with at the moment where there's someone who a sugar addiction is causing health problems. So not necessarily weight problems, but it is causing health issues. So someone who is
like blood pressure and
there's I probably can't say specifically because it'd be quite easy for them to identify themselves if I say what their symptoms are, but it's the sugar addiction is causing symptoms, and they work in an environment where they've got access to lots of sugar, sort of bakery type environment.
Okay.
So they are proactively trying to support this person in terms of, well, look, it's not about losing weight because this person doesn't have an issue with their weight, but what can we do to help support behavioral change so that your health can recover?
Mm-hmm.
Which should be, you know, that should be a sensible conversation that we should be able
to have. It
should
be an adult conversation.
What they want to do is help promote attendance at work rather than this person being on, being off, being on, being off, saying, well, look, what can we do to help you? So with this individual, they were prepared to pay for a private nutritionist and private support to enable them to change their behaviour.
Responsibility, that's good.
Which is, you know, that...
It's what you want to hear, isn't it?
Yeah, it's. I would say that is a good and reasonable step that a responsible employer can take. How you have those conversations, we've got to be very careful, because if an employee takes it the wrong way, then we can be getting into hot water.
It's coming from a place of, not love, is it, but like concern.
Yeah.
It's coming from a good place. Yeah.
But tribunals have been lost from employers coming from a good place. It does happen.
It doesn't stand up in court, does it? Come from a good place.
No. Not necessarily, you know. And there was a big case a couple of years ago. Say it's a couple of years ago. It might be even longer than that now, with a major supermarket where they had an elderly lady who was suffering from, I believe it was dementia. The employee had a turn at work, and to try and assist her with getting home, another member of staff went through her bag and found her phone and her keys. They rang her daughter to come and collect her. And there were various other things that went on in this case, but it ended up in tribunal and the supermarket lost. And as part of the judgment, the judge said, you came from a good place, but you violated this woman's dignity by rummaging through her handbag.
Oh.
So they were trying to help. They were, but it's the way that they went about it, and they were criticised whilst it was acknowledged by the judge that it came from a good place. It was still the wrong thing to do.
Violation of privacy type thing.
And dignity.
Dignity. You don't know what's going to be.
So even if something is coming from a good place, it's always important that we get advice to make sure that our approach objectively is still legally safe.
Yeah.
Because saying, judge, but I meant well, doesn't mean that you won't go down legally. And that your company couldn't end up in financial water.
It doesn't stand up well, does it?
No.
Oh, dear. Where are we? We've got this is the last one as an employer. So higher obesity levels are linked to lower productivity in England. If the cost becomes unsustainable, what options do we have regarding the employee's continued employment with the company?
So if you have a situation where obesity is causing somebody to be regularly off sick and their attendance levels are falling below an acceptable standard, they would be dealt with in line with a formal capability procedure. So in the way that, you know, if someone is off regularly with flu, Mondayitis as I call it, you know, when they sort of have a heavy weekend and don't come in on a Monday, or any other condition that somebody might have. So somebody can be dismissed for being off sick too much, even if it's something that they can't control. And that's often a point of conflict where you'll have someone in a formal sickness review meeting where they say, well, you're issuing me with a warning, but it's not my fault. I can't control my health. And it feels like quite a tough message to have to deliver, to say, well, we appreciate that, but actually your absence is causing issues with the business that mean that we are going to have to consider termination and that we replace you with somebody who can attend work. So that is something that an employer can do, provided they follow a fair and reasonable policy and procedure.
I don't mind that.
And they give the employee a chance to improve.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you've got someone who has got a long-term condition, as an employer, you are expected to give them time to medically recover. If you've got someone who, you know, their condition is going to mean that they can't attend work for over a year, or they're going to be consistently on and off, on and off, on and off, and it's very disruptive, and it looks like there's no reasonable chance that situation is going to improve and you've got medical evidence to show that, then potentially an employer can look at dismissal. So in this situation, if you've got someone where, because of their obesity, they are routinely absent from work or they're off on long-term sick, if we follow a fair procedure where we get medical evidence, we engage with the employee, we issue attendance warnings, mm-hmm. and they understand what's potentially coming down the line, we could potentially dismiss in a situation like this. What we just need to be mindful of is if there are reasonable adjustments that we can make that would promote better attendance, that we need to be looking at those. So in this situation with Callum, he's basically saying the chair will mean that I can attend work more often. But if we're saying the chair is too expensive and we can't afford it and we don't think it's a reasonable adjustment, we can, as an employer, say, look, we appreciate that that could help promote your attendance, but it's not a reasonable adjustment that the company can afford. Termination as an alternative could potentially be fair, provided we follow a fair procedure and we take account of anything else that we could use to help promote attendance with this person.
It wouldn't be like an immediate
Absolutely not.
It'd be a
It's a long process. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at potential termination on the basis of absence from work because of health, this is not an overnight decision. One, you owe it to the employee to give them time to recover, to collect that medical evidence, to have these discussions. It's not a quick decision like perhaps you'd get with gross misconduct, because ultimately it's not the employee's fault.
No.
We need to be following a staged process where an employee knows what's going on, they can engage with it, and we're giving them a reasonable time to recover and improve their own attendance.
Transparency is important. Right, on to the questions from the employee now. So, more than two-thirds of employees have admitted to being more inclined to give an attractive person a job. Could refusing to provide necessary accommodations due to my weight be considered workplace discrimination? Could I take this to tribunal?
So, if someone were refused a job on the basis that they are overweight, so if it's size only,
how do they know, though? How would they know?
So, I suppose if someone attends interview, you know, obviously you get a look of someone. The days of providing a photograph with your application, I think, are most
that creeped me out when you told me that last week.
So, the story that we discussed when we were putting this episode together was when I first started out in the corporate world, your CV would be accompanied by a passport photo. You know, you had to provide one to go with your application.
I'm not okay with that.
And I remember back then as well, so there's various sort of tongue-in-cheek legal publications. And actually, I think one of them might still be going, where they rated like the hottest lawyers.
Oh my God, no.
But there was a law firm that had a reputation for having like the prettiest trainees or the most attractive staff base.
The sleaziest CEO.
So yeah, it's let's not go there. We're not appointing people on the basis of looks. But there was an article in, I believe it was an American publication. I want to say The Economist, but I could be wrong. I did say I'd check that. That said, basically, if you're a woman who is overweight, you are less likely to get a C-suite position.
It wasn't the same for men, was it?
No, it wasn't the same for men. So for women, that your weight directly affects, there's a correlation between your weight if you're a woman and how successful you are at work.
I read this for, it's based on height for men.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, I read it in a book yesterday. I didn't even bring it up. If you're over like, if you're over six foot.
I know the whole concept's wrong anyway, but you know, arguably you can control your, you can't control your height,
can
you?
Be very careful. No.
You know, this is not
shocking.
There's not a huge amount other than, well, Tom Cruise wears steps, doesn't he?
He's 5'4", isn't he?
Yeah, but doesn't he put things in his shoes to make him bigger?
He has to.
Well.
What choice has he got? Oh, where were we?
People being more inclined to give an attractive person a job. So you know, there are companies that in the past have admitted doing this. But if someone is refused a position on the basis of their weight, currently is not a protected characteristic. So no, you wouldn't be able to bring a discrimination claim. If someone was refused a job on the basis of medical conditions, then arguably you would have a claim for disability discrimination. So it's whether somebody can make that link between being overweight and having a disability. So if someone, for example, said that at interview, they are a larger person, at interview they disclose that they have weight-related medical issues and they were refused the job, they would likely try and make that link to say, well, it's because they think I'm going to be off sick more often of my medical conditions. So it's how much of a leap there is between, you know, the weight, medical conditions and the refusal. But weight alone, not enough at the moment for discrimination. Like I say, there are people campaigning for its inclusion, so that could be something that we could see a law change on in the future. But presently, it wouldn't be enough to take somebody to tribunal for it.
Okay. Second question, as an employee, since we kind of covered this, but I'll see if I understand it, as you've already said it. Since the chair is necessary for my work, shouldn't it be considered a legitimate working expense? Why wouldn't the company cover this cost? It's unreasonable.
Yeah, so in this situation, I mean, it really was thousands. We're not talking like, you know, I mean, office chairs can get a bit ridiculous. And I've got a client that all of their staff work from home, and they get ridiculous requests occasionally for people who blatantly are trying to buy gaming chairs and get the company to pay for it. You know, they're not office chairs. You can buy an office chair on Amazon. Other retailers are available. You can buy an office chair on Amazon for, what, 70 quid.
You can, yeah.
It doesn't need to necessarily run into the hundreds of pounds for, you know, these super, super nice chairs. No. If you've got someone who perhaps has back or, you know, bone issues that mean that they need specialist chairs, this does occasionally happen where you'll have someone who's seen occupational health or their physio has said that they need a specialist chair. Again, you're looking at hundreds for those. They don't tend to run into the thousands.
You can get add-ons as well, can't you, to existing chairs?
You can. So there are often affordable options. We've also, in the UK, we've got Access to Work, which is an organisation where you can get grants to help support companies with equipment where it's going to help a disabled employee stay in work. In this situation, Access to Work wouldn't cover this, and it was thousands, and the company simply couldn't afford it. So whilst, yes, in principle, a chair to enable somebody with medical conditions to attend work would be a reasonable adjustment or a legitimate business expense. In this situation, it wasn't a reasonable adjustment because it was so very expensive. And it was a situation where, you know, three had already been provided, but the situation had just become so much more serious and so much worse. So it wasn't that the company just refused to do this. They had, over the course of a number of years, engaged with this employee and given them the equipment that they needed. But it reached a point where it became fundamentally unaffordable.
Not sustainable, is it?
No.
No. Okay. Final one, as an employee, only 16% of employees feel they receive sufficient mental health support at work. What support can the company offer to help me address my food addiction and improve my health?
So there's lots of resources out there that employers can use to support their employees, and they don't necessarily have to represent a huge expense. There's lots of free resources out available on the internet. So for smaller employers or employers where there are budget constraints, it's really worth having a look online and seeing what's available. There are lots of charities that are providing free mental health support, where there's lots of resources online. So I would say free resources, start there. In terms of then paid for support, if it's something really specific like food addiction, it's unlikely that you'd need to supply this across the staff base. So when we're looking at cost, if you're looking to support one employee, then it may well be a reasonable adjustment for you to be looking at what support you can provide them if it's someone who has got medical conditions that qualify for disability discrimination. So it doesn't have to be super expensive. We can start right at the bottom, look at what's free, what's really cheap, and then work up the scale from then. In terms of whether we have to do this, no, we don't. We need to bear in mind, if we've got people with medical conditions, that, you know, it could potentially be a reasonable adjustment to look for external support and resources for people who have got medical problems that require external support. But when it's looking at something like food addiction, that's may well be limited to perhaps quite an isolated or a single member of staff, there's probably not going to be a huge expense there in supporting one person. We also need to remember, from a cultural perspective, your favourite word, culture, that it's, you know, having a proactive approach to supporting our employees in a bespoke basis. It's very easy to say, here's a link to Mind. If you're having mental health issues, go and have a look on their website. But actually engaging with someone who has come to you with a very particular problem and saying, look, let's see how we can support you and let's look at some bespoke support, that's going to really go a long way to supporting that relationship with that employee and helping build that culture. Significantly more so than, you know, free ice cream in the summer.
It's a good precedent for workforce as well, if they see that, do you know what I mean? They'll be like, we can get a bit of that.
They feel looked after. They feel like you've got an interest in their well-being. And that goes a long, long way, I would say, particularly these days, towards retention.
I agree. Sort of wrapping up time, innit? We've got a stat to finish on. Obesity is thought to cost the UK economy £27 billion a year. our poor NHS. What emergency measures can HR departments take from this?
So in terms of measures for HR, there's probably, you know, we're not going to be weighing employees as they come through the door to spot a trend, are we?
Although some people do.
Some people do. So when we come on to do our employment law around the world, we'll be looking at that in a bit more detail. Airlines, some of the more budget airlines keep threatening to weigh people, don't they, before they get on planes and offsetting baggage weights and things like that.
One of my mates brought it up to me a year ago and I don't know, I'm not saying I agree with it.
No,
but I don't know. I do kind of see the sense. Surely it's going to cost more fuel.
I don't think I understand the physics enough.
Maybe not, yeah.
With a plane, whether having someone who's a bit overweight on one side is going to mean the difference between the plane successfully getting there or not. If it were down to that, whether the plane's going to land or not, yes, get on the scales.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I want to get to my holiday. But,
we've got capacity.
Yeah, like I say, my physics isn't of a level enough to be able to engage in that properly, I would say. But from a HR perspective, I would say have a think about what resources we've got available. If looking at your staff base, you think, you know what, I think there could be a trend here in terms of people join our company and tend to gain weight. It doesn't mean that you need to necessarily have those conversations with individuals, but there could be resources that you make available in terms of support for staff members. What I wouldn't be doing is, you know, going around and prodding people going, oh, you know, I've joined Weight Watchers, want to come with me? Let's not do that. Allow people to be themselves and make the support available and make sure people know where to go get it. We don't need to necessarily be patronizing people. But I'm one of those, you know, the last law firm I worked at, I had come out of the city, going to the gym every day, walking into work, and then moved to a firm where the nearest sort of available food resources were generally junk food. So if you didn't make your lunch and bring it in, you know, it was kind of chips
you've
and lasagna
it,
at
yeah,
lunch.
You've had it.
Wasn't really a gym to go to, and I was driving to work. I piled on weight. Mm-hmm. Would I have been receptive to free resources, perhaps free gym memberships as perks and things like that? Probably, yeah. You know, if it was there, as long as someone didn't come in and sort of hand me a free gym pass and go, looks like you need this.
Get cracking.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have taken that quite so well. But yeah, it's let's think in a sort of pastoral capacity. What's nice to make available to support our employees' health and well-being is the way I would look at that.
I was going to try and answer that then, but that's not my job, is it? I was going to list off loads of stuff.
Venture an opinion, go ahead.
I'd say like a company dietitian.
Something that I've been looking at actually for our platform is how what we can build into the wellbeing side of it so that people can build their own sort of resources. So, you know, not everybody wants necessarily mental health support. Some people do want to talk about fitness, finances, nutrition. Mm-hmm. So giving people the option of what sort of support they seek out. So it wouldn't necessarily be that you'd engage an employee to be a nutritionist, but perhaps look, these are the available resources. Here's a budget within our wellbeing package. You go get what you think you need for support.
People in businesses have got hobbies as well. Mm-hmm. Like if I've got any questions on the economy, I'll know where I'm going in the office.
Not me.
I'm not going to you, I'm not going to Dawn. I'm off to Michael in the corner. And I'm going to ask him the question, and he'll probably know. Mm-hmm. If I want to know about employment law, I'm asking you, because you're qualified, obviously. Yeah. You've been doing it for your career. Mm-hmm. It's just a done thing, isn't it? So mm-hmm. is that like a... Have you seen it where businesses like built their own knowledge bases almost?
You've got to be careful when it comes to things that could be classed as medical support, because what we don't want is people sort of giving out unqualified advice that could cause somebody harm. So particularly in the nutrition world, where you get these really crazy diet trends.
Take these fat melting injections.
Yeah, and that I've done in the past, the apple cider, yeah, drinking apple cider.
Apple cider vinegar.
Yeah, that, and like not having anything else or, you know,
horrible.
Where you try and get into ketosis and all you do is eat, you know, and it's yeah. so damaging. I don't think there is a fad diet actually over the years that I haven't tried.
Yeah.
And all it meant was that I just continued to gain weight. I would drop a load of weight, gain some weight, drop a load of weight, gain some weight.
That's classic,
isn't it? And you know what? In this year since I've come, you know, founded Heroes, been working here, you know, I always joke and say that it's managing work stress and to stop me shouting at my husband that I've started running. You know, you eat stuff in moderation, you do more exercise.
Eat less, move more.
Exactly.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
Calories in, calories out.
The fad diet thing. And it's always been, I wouldn't say led by someone, but there's always been either someone at work who's like, oh, try this. You know, those stupid pyramid structures where they've got shakes and tablets and oh, just no, just don't.
Eat normal food. Yeah,
you don't need to be handing your money to somebody to give you something that's full of chemicals that means that you're not eating solid food anymore.
Yeah, don't get me started.
If you know, that is, for me, it's not a meal unless it's soup with a bit of crusty bread. It's not a meal if I haven't chewed something. So yeah, the diet shake culture for me has just gone. So look, you know, my view on that is we don't want to be taking unsolicited advice on nutrition from someone who's not qualified.
Kerry from Herbalife.
Exactly. Particularly if it's in a pyramid structure, just don't do
Come on. Closing thoughts, key things. You've already highlighted what went on here and the poor chap sadly passed away.
Yes. So he, as I say, this was someone who was, say, this morbidly obese, and then there's kind of the next level. So he had a multitude of health issues. Unfortunately, it was a really, really sad situation. And where the sort of HR support on this moved on to, because this guy was a really, really popular chap, was how we supported those employees with the loss, because he did remain employed. In the end, he didn't come into the office. They did support him at home, but they looked at various ways that they could support him socially as well. So he was open to people coming to his house. So people would join him for lunch and, you know, go and spend sort of part of the day with him and things like that. So they were a really, really proactive and really kind of modern employer in that respect, as they were prepared to think outside the box. But yeah, in terms of, you know, supporting a staff base when you have got a loss like this, that became the next challenge really for this company.
It's a lot of grief.
So in terms of, you know, closing thoughts, it's back to that culture point again, isn't it? It's how can we think proactively about how we can support people in a positive way, which this company were really, really good at, actually. You know, once that door was closed on terms of that financial support, it was, well, look, how can we bring the work social life to you? And how can we still make it so that you've still got a positive work environment?
It's nice of them.
And it's thinking, if we have to say no, well, what else can we say yes to?
Yeah, that's all I've got time for today. Thank you for your contributions as ever and your stats.
Your stats. I'm not the stats lady. Dawn stats. I'm not the stats person. I'm the law person.
Thanks for your law. Thanks for your stats. Yeah, have you got anything you want to say before we sign off today?
Just the usual. So thank you so much, everyone, for listening. We love the feedback, and I particularly love that we're having so many of our clients and people that we work with reaching out, asking us to include their content as well. So thank you so much for everyone who's engaging so well with us. We're really enjoying doing this. And yeah, ready for episode 17.
Like, comment, subscribe. Thanks for your time.
Until next time, we're your hosts signing off from HRER. Take care of your HR and may your workplace be disaster-free. Before we go, a big thank you to you for tuning in, and don't forget to subscribe. If you have your own ER stories or suggestions for future episodes, reach out to us at Heroes or on social media, or even HRER@heroes.co.uk. As we navigate the maze of workplace blunders, remember that no organisation is perfect, but by sharing these stories, we can all work towards creating healthier, happier and more productive workplaces.